Hello, welcome to the Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
And this is Dr. Lana Love. Welcome to our show. Today we have a show on nonviolent communication, which is a really important topic, which has grown in, in importance over the years.
Certainly has.
And we have with us Nora Hoffman, who's a specialist in nonviolent communication. And also a good friend of ours.
Yeah, we met Nora in Mount Shasta during our spiritual retreat with David Quigley of the Alchemy Institute. And so we got introduced to the idea of nonviolent communication, and we're very excited to have Nora on our show and explore violence and nonviolent reduction methods, de-escalating and defusing conflicts. I've actually been doing a lot of advanced security courses last weekend and next few weeks. So this is something that's really taking hold in Australia, this kind of nonviolent movement towards conflict reduction. So really in Australia, they actually don't allow bodyguards and security personnel to use weapons without special consent of the court system, the New South Wales Police. So the programming, which is the training, which is mandated by the New South Wales Police, is based on nonviolent methods of de-escalating and defusing violent encounters. So what we learned with Nora and with some other women, we also worked with a nonviolent communicator in New South Wales recently. So what we've learned is really useful, and it's useful in everything that we've been talking about on the radio show in relations to having successful relationships of all kinds, intimate relationships and personal relationships, professional, and even what's happening on a global scale between nations. So what do you think, Lana?
Absolutely.
I just really, had a whole mouthful.
Really important for the world, nonviolent communication. So, and nonviolent communication is something that I believe that the person that set it up was Marshall Rosenberg back in the 1960s. It's been used quite a lot in the world. But Nora can tell us all about that. Now, Nora is a hypnotherapist and a counselor who specializes in nonviolent communication. And Nora, thank you so much for being on our show.
Yes, my pleasure.
Wonderful, wonderful to have you on our show. Nora, tell us a little bit about yourself. And you have a website, I believe, which is www.teutonicconsulting.com.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's Teutonic Consulting because I'm German and Teutonic means German, Germanic.
Right.
Yeah.
So how did you get into the area of nonviolent communication?
Well, I have friends who were into it, and I first was exposed to it, I think, in 2001 when I had a boyfriend. We took a couple classes, but then I moved to Los Angeles and went to school there, and there was actually at the time no NVC trainers easily accessible to me. So then in 2005, I came back to the Bay Area and got married to my partner, who was a Vietnam Special Forces veteran. He was a sniper. He was 22 years older, and he was very jealous. And he also had a lot of violence. And I took one look at the relationship, and I thought, done, we stand one chance, and that's nonviolent communication. And so we began to study it in depth. And in fact, he began to change through the nonviolent communication. We were together for 7 years. And so basically, it became a way of learning about a warrior, you know, who usually acted immediately when he felt threatened or saw anybody he loved threatened, reacted violently. And also from a lot of fear, he had a lot of fear. So I began to learn about him and his deeper feelings and needs. And I learned to communicate with him, and he learned to communicate with me. It was a very passionate relationship, you can imagine. There was a lot of fire, and it went both directions. It went into intense fights, insane fights. And it also, there was a lot of passion and romance. But yeah, without the nonviolent communication, I don't know if we would have survived it.
So it was very passionate, fiery romance, mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you talk about fear, because when I guess when a lot of people are angry and people feel they're about to attack them, it takes some time to actually step back and realize very often the person who is the most violent is often in fear. Mm.
Fear is often at the bottom of all of most conflicts, I think. And what came to me when I heard you talk about fear is that people are often react. They have an emotional reaction that's fear-based when they're not getting their needs met, which is needs has a lot to do with nonviolent communication. It's all about addressing people's needs, I believe.
Yes, it is actually about recognizing our shared humanity beneath it all, that we all want love, we all want sustenance, we all want shelter, we want to be seen, we want to matter. And so the needs are completely the same across everything, probably across all sentient beings, because everything we do or think or say is actually an attempt to meet a need. We may not always be conscious of that that's what's going on, and so we're stuck in the way we're trying to meet the need if we don't know what the need is. We get attached to the strategy. But the only reason anything does anything, in my opinion, is because it's meeting a need. Some of them are just self-expression, actualization, growth, but I think all of nature actually operates upon the principle of needs. That's why nature does what it does, to meet needs.
I'm actually very excited by that concept, because it really, really helps to empathize. You know, I think in many other areas of psychology, systems of understanding, empathy features highly, but quite often we don't know how to empathize. Mm. And it's not always that easy to just imagine yourself in the other person's boots or shoes. But when you specifically focus on the other person's needs, it gives you such a good way of understanding the other person. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about these needs. What are the, because I believe in nonviolent communication, there's a lot of different needs, and you have to try to identify the person's needs in order to, I guess, empathize with them.
And can I just add one thing? In my own book, Illusion of the Body, what came to me from my higher power was very prominent, that I didn't realize until now, was the idea of Maslow's hierarchy pyramid of needs, starting with basic needs up to your higher needs to self-actualization. And I'm starting to realize the importance of that, and that when every behavior is based on a need. So this is very relevant to ending violent conflicts and reducing and de-escalating and finding resolutions, because it gives us, when we add empathy and active listening to the conflict resolution process, we start to understand the other person better, and we start to understand their needs. And by doing that, there's cooperation as the result, and there's negotiation, and we settle the conflicts, hopefully, and we end up getting resolution to them when we get our own needs met in the process. So this is all very practical.
Absolutely. So what are some of the needs, the different needs that people have, Nora?
So I want to just briefly say about what David just said about that actualization is at the top of the ladder. It's actually when the needs are met, and you look at what needs are met when certain needs are met. So basically, you deepen the meeting of needs, and at the bottom is usually a need for union with life that you can name one way or another. But being in the flow of life, union with life, and so in me, there is sometimes, I wonder if actually at the basis, not at the top of the hierarchy of needs, at the bottom actually might be the need to be in union with life, to be fully one with life itself. And so now back to what Lana asked. So what's very important to recognize is there are needs which are universal in the sense of that they're not specific. And there are strategies, which is the way we meet needs. And this is very important to discern, because as soon as you confuse a strategy with a need, you're in trouble. Usually you're in a conflict and it gets worse. For example, if I'm in a fight with a person, some people will say, I need you to leave the room. But leaving the room, you can tell it's very specific. And it's a strategy. The need is actually for peace. So the other person might actually also want peace, but the way they meet their needs for peace is actually by having the conversation and by trusting that the person stays with them through the conflict. And so that person would be completely against leaving the room. And so there would be a huge conflict. But both people want peace. It's just that one... But what's up?
Nora, can I just be the devil's advocate here? In my experience, both in practice and with people personally, while I would love to believe that everyone has a need for peace, there are some people that seem to actually want to fight and seem to have a need to fight.
But do you remember when we went through this with the God of Warfare, who the reason why he wanted to, he fought in order to win. The reason he wanted to win is because once he had won, he felt peace.
We had an experience with you where we went through the process of learning nonviolent communication, and we sort of channeled the quote-unquote God of War who spoke, and we had some negotiations. It's kind of a fun process that we went through, so it was a really good experience. But you're saying that the need was to win, is that right?
To win is not a need, because it's very specific. The need was, at the surface, was satisfaction. And when he had satisfaction, so the need, the deeper need beyond satisfaction was, when he had satisfaction, he was finally at peace. Mm. The reason he fought to begin with was because his precious peace was disturbed. And so he had to now go on a war because his precious peace was disturbed. And so he went on a war and he had to win the war. And once he won the war, he was satisfied. And why was he satisfied? Because now he had his precious peace restored.
Right. Yeah. Okay. It's a really good way of understanding people, and there's multiple levels almost that you have to think through in order to get to what it is that people really want.
I think that's true, because when we're arguing with someone, we don't actually know what the other person is arguing about most of the time, because there's so many subconscious layers and conflicts at work that could be. We've said this many times on the show that people are working through traumas and conflicts and issues from past lives and other lives and their childhood with their parents. So they may be fighting with, when they're fighting with you, they may be fighting with their mother or father and trying to work through that stuff. So
how many skeletons in the closet are there?
So when we channel the quote unquote God of War, Aries, that consciousness, which often comes through people, if you believe this, who knows what the person is arguing about. Or what their needs are that they're trying to get met. It's very interesting, fascinating process to go through.
So, Nora, I believe that when using the NVC process, there are several steps that are used. And I'm just wondering whether you can take us through those steps.
Yes. So you want to at first differentiate what you're observing from what you interpret is going on. So an observation is a shared frame of reference in a conflict. If I say to you, you are angry at me, that's an interpretation, and it usually escalates a fight. But if I say, your voice sounds louder to me than just a minute ago, then now I'm establishing a shared frame of reference.
Well, that's very interesting. I would have thought that being angry is an observation, but what you're saying is the word anger itself carries a judgment.
It is an interpretation. Judgment and interpretation can be, an interpretation can be a judgment, and a judgment can be an interpretation. But clearly, if I see somebody's face, I cannot truly know what's going on deep inside their hearts or bellies. unless I am them and tuned into myself. So anything, in my opinion, I might be empathically picking up on feelings, but then I'm still observing within me a feeling of anger. That does not mean that it's theirs, but I can use it to find out if it's what they're feeling. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, that's a very good point.
So that's very important to establish a shared frame of reference, meaning if I describe it to you and you were to see the videotape, you'd describe it and we'd all agree on it. We'd all say, okay, there's a green chair over here and a purple desk over there. So that is usually very, very helpful because oftentimes I assume that a person has a very different motivation than they really have. And my assumption about their motivation will often bring up unmet needs because I have a story. For example, if somebody looks at me with an intense look, I might experience that as a criticism. And so I might feel afraid and need acceptance, and I might feel hurt. But when I inquire about what's going on in them, it might just be that they are scared about something. Perhaps they're scared of losing the connection. And as soon as I know what's really going on, then my story changes about what's going on. And with that, often the needs that are active change. Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does. Tell me, Nora, though, when you inquire, if someone seems to be angry, or should I say, if you observe someone being raising their voice and acting in a somewhat
aggressive manner.
Sometimes the very act of inquiring something of them can seem a bit frightening and daunting and can result in more aggression. Can you suggest how you can inquire about something like that without making the situation worse?
Well, you know, what's the famous line, inquire within? I would actually first look inside me. So if I'm faced with somebody and I'm feeling the heat within me as well, you know, the adrenaline, the fear and fire, both ready to fight or flight or freeze, I put the self-empathy hat on first. It's like the oxygen mask in the airplane. You want to put it on yourself first before handing it to others or your children. And yes. So then I look inside me, and once I'm in touch with my own feelings and needs, which in this case would most likely be fear and aggravation on the feelings, which and my needs would be perhaps safety, perhaps trust, perhaps love. Once I'm in touch with myself, and it's always worth to take that time to get in touch with oneself, that's my experience, and that's almost my main practice, to remind myself to check my own feelings and needs first before moving forward. Then usually something in me relaxes once I know myself in the given situation. And my own relaxation then will enable to open my heart to myself. And then there's usually also a friendly curiosity toward the other person once I'm a bit diffused in my own tension.
Wow, that's a brilliant technique.
Yes, a lot of this is very observational. It's sort of self-observational and checking in with your own feelings and your own thoughts. And I've found this works very well for me, just to be mindful and feel myself in my own body and feel my feet in the floor and feel centered within myself and really know what my thoughts are before, so I can respond to a situation rather than react to it. And and just breathing, really, so that you're not blowing up and making things escalate and the situation ends up getting out of control. We spent a lot of time over the weekend studying this with our security manager instructor. He's a bodyguard, and he was in there's a lot of Aussie former military students here who are it's fascinating. It's a very and he, we went over we watched videos on a TED talk about Philip Zimbardo, who wrote The Psychology of Evil, talking about torture and war crimes as a type of social disease, and it's at the basis of human nature this way, not
that it's not human nature to be evil, quote unquote, but
or angry,
but it's more of a learned social condition. So we spent a lot of time talking about this and how to reduce and de-escalate these situations. Because right now we've got a lot of people who are worried about what's happening in the South China Sea, because we've got Russia down here with their warship destroyers doing joint military exercises with China. And, you know, United States wants to come in and do their freedom of navigation. It's been escalating, and it's been escalating in the Middle East and in Ukraine. And we don't, obviously, most people don't want this to blow up and have missiles flying everywhere. And it's almost what's happening on a global scale is what symbolically happens between two people in a relationship when they have domestic violence. So
that's actually very true. And my gosh, if we could get the global leaders to take this nonviolent communication course, my God, Putin and Obama and the leaders of China, that would be so much better. But as you say, you have to start with yourselves. Okay, so, Nora, so assuming, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you, yes.
So assuming you have then, you're in a situation with someone where there's, you know, potential tension and escalation, you look within to understand your own needs, you take a deep breath, and then you observe the other person. And then how would you go about gently inquiring of the other person what it is that is bugging them? How would you normally say that?
Yeah, so I do it at first silently. I noticed, especially with warriors, they definitely do not want to be asked, are you feeling scared? If I asked that question of my ex-husband, oh boy, I'd have a fight on my hands. Because fear is not what fits a warrior's self-image. So I do it in my heart first and in my mind. And I think that's the safest way. I've noticed that simply by exploring within me what the other person's needs might be, that something begins to soften energetically between me and the other person. Because in a way, I stop projecting my seeing them as an enemy. And so by that psychic action of beginning to see them as a fellow human being,
yes,
something already changes.
Wow, very wise.
That's true, because we start to see, once we have understanding, then we have compassion, because we start to see that the other person's behaviors are strategies that they're using to get their needs met. And that sort of changes our whole outlook on the situation and in the person that we're dealing with, so that, you know, if you have compassion for the other person, then you want that person to get their needs met as much as you want to get your own needs met, so that you have a mutually beneficial resolution of the situation.
Okay, exactly. So assuming that you have looked within, you actually ask the other person inside of yourself.
I wonder,
where do we go
myself, from? You know, then I begin to look at them. I assume, for one, Marshall Rosenberg calls it the assumption of innocence. I assume that behind what looks like a furious, scary monster is a tender, quivering heart. And so I begin to guess within my own mind, because I might still be somewhat scared, and any word out of my mouth might carry that charge of my own fear and might incense things. So I just begin to explore in my mind what's going on for them. You know, are they needing... And the fastest way is to just go to these universal needs in my mind. Are they needing peace? Are they needing to feel safe in their life, safety? Are they needing integrity? Often, a fight is often, people raise their voices. Why? Because they want to be heard. It's like, duh, oh, you know, my ex-husband once put me in a restraining hold. That's why, you know, it was really important to learn the NVC, and I also left him for a while because that method wasn't working for me. But he put me in a restraining hold, and he said, now you're going to listen to me. And I was like, oh my God, he wants to be heard. You know, I mean, I was like pretty perturbed by the action, but I said to him, oh, you want to be heard. So that changed the dynamic a little bit. But, you know, I don't recommend staying in a relationship where somebody does that, uses that strategy to be heard. Yeah.
My goodness, Laura, are you saying that you're able to be empathic despite being in a stranglehold?
I was basically logical, you know, I did not have room for empathy, but because the words he used, he literally said, now you're going to listen to me. I was like, it was just by logic. I was like, oh, he says he wants to be listened to. He wants to be heard, you know. So
I don't think everybody would have the patience that you have. I mean, that's really amazing that you did that, but I can see what you mean. But certainly you're not suggesting we do that with other people. Mm-hmm. And I think you suggested that can we use the word wander when you're approaching someone? I wonder if you're feeling hurt, or I wonder if you're feeling frightened.
Exactly, because when you use wonder or always a question, then what happens is that they recognize that you care about them.
Okay.
So versus if I say, oh, you're hurt, then comes back the judgment. I shouldn't feel hurt. I shouldn't feel angry. We judge each other and ourselves for the feelings we have, unfortunately, in our culture. But if you just do a friendly inquiry, now the person may still be scared and react aggressively, but often already just the friendly inquiry will land to them as, oh, I actually matter to this person. They actually care about what's in my heart. And it is a good way to begin the de-escalation, though it may not always work.
With nonviolent communication, do we normally formulate a question rather than leave it open-ended, such as, I wonder how you're feeling?
Yes, we do make an offer, because the thing is, when somebody is triggered, or whatever you want to call it, when somebody is upset and angry and flipped into a personality pattern in order to meet a need, it's usually that they're out of touch with what's going on within them. They've lost their connection with themselves. And so in general, we don't have much training in the language of feelings and needs. Or some people do. I mean, I know you do, Lana, but a lot of people don't. And so what we do is basically, rather than making them cook their own meal, we offer them a variety of foods that they can choose from. You know, so we say, we offer a feeling. Are you feeling this? Are you needing this? So if they don't have the active language, they definitely have the passive vocabulary, and they will be able to say yes or no. And when they say no, then at least now they recognize what's not going on for them, and it helps them find out, and it helps us who wants to make contact with somebody to find out what is truly going on in them. It has to be a question, because in our society, we analyze each other a lot, and there's no love in that. This is a way to actually create a space where we can explore what's going on within us, and each person remains the expert about themselves, rather than somebody else telling them what's going on for them.
Okay, so maybe take us through this, because there are so many, feelings that can be attributed to a person, and quite often people might feel several feelings at the same time. And I note that you were saying that if you have an angry man, that you can't, even though they might be feeling frightened, not a good idea to suggest that at first. So say we have a situation with a generic person.
We can actually go through this, I think, real quick.
Absolutely. So you have a situation where you're with another person and a generic human being, and they seem to be very hostile towards you. Where do we go from here? We've looked within. We looked at our own feelings. We have asked the question of them within ourselves psychically. Our heart is opening up. Now we're actually going to talk.
Well, it really completely depends on the situation, right? Because because the needs that I discover within me and that are alive in the other person will determine how we proceed now. So the first step is observation, right? The second step is feelings, and the third step is needs, and the fourth step is requests. Requests can be of another, or the first request is usually of ourselves, right? So here I am in a situation. I've now made a guessing assessment, right? It's a guess about what might be going on for the other person. I may even only have a guess what's more going on for me. Sometimes it takes a few days to get to the bottom of what really went on, right? Our psyches are very complex. So here I am sitting with these guesses. All I know is we share this humanity, this fragile thing, this this tender, beautiful, mysterious thing, but and we share the condition that we don't often don't know what's really going on and how we got here and how where we're going to end up. But so I'm sitting in this delicate situation, and so then now it comes from that guest assessment emerges what I will do next. So it is very, very, I would have to think of a specific situation.
Well, let's do a situation perhaps with me and David, make it nice. I'm very much a believer in doing things that are very practical. So let's think up a situation with me and David might have a bit of tenseness, and maybe you can take us through the whole process. So David's just scribbled something about a situation where he was angry. Lana, I'm angry because we're late for our appointment. All right. So that's a situation that sometimes comes up.
So
the grandma is, of course, wrong already in I am angry because you. So this is Marshall Rosenberg always called this, I think, wrong grammar. And by the way, I need to say that I am not a certified NVC trainer. Marshall Rosenberg's Center for Nonviolent Communication requests that people be very clear about this. I have studied it for a very long time and I've taught it, but I am not a certified NVC trainer. And so this is important to note. They really care about the integrity of their terminology around this. So, okay. So then back to David being upset because late is already considered, is it a judgment? Is it an interpretation? Well, it is what we describe the differential between when we agreed on meeting and when we really meet, right? That's late.
Yes, so I'm coming out and saying, Lana, I'm angry. I'm pissed off because we're late. You know, we've got an appointment. We were supposed to leave 20 minutes ago, and now we're going to be late, and we're not going to get to our destination on time, and this has happened in the past, and now my voice is going up, right. And
so we're going at each other. Before we escalated into all the history and the future, in this moment, why do you want to be on time? There is a need. What do you get? What need is met if you have your partner with you and you both get there on time? What needs are met? And that's the question to ask. And is there maybe something around wanting to be reliable to people?
Yeah, well, it's my own. It would be whatever the situation happens to be, and because we're just making this up, but it's a real-life situation.
So it's up to me. So I'm in this situation. I'm assuming that I'm the one who's empathizing with my own needs, and my own needs are I've got someone who's irritated with me, and I want to be loved and understood. So I'm looking within, and then I'm looking within and asking myself what it is that David is wanting, and I'm guessing that David is wanting peace of mind, and he's a person that is wanting things to go smoothly, and rather than being a monster, he's a tender, quivering heart. Okay, and now I'm asking the question of David, and I need to formulate this, so I'm going to formulate this and say, David, I wonder whether you have the need to be at peace. How did that go?
So you want me to answer that? Well, I don't know if it's about peace. It's about, you know, maybe we've made a prior commitment with someone wherever we're going. Maybe it's just the movies, let's say. And I had my heart set on going to a movie because we've had a hard day and a hard week. We haven't had any fun.
So I'm trying to de-escalate this, and
we've missed the movie, so we're not going to be able to see.
I talked to you here before because so what just occurred is, you know, Lana, when I talked about you prepare a bunch of dishes and offer them. So the dish you offered, which was peace, wasn't the dish he wanted to eat, but he's already saying the next one, he wanted to take a break from the stress of the week, and he wanted some fun and play. So now you can guess that.
So I'm hearing that you're saying you wanted to play. You wanted to have some fun.
Right. That could be one scenario. It could have been that we made a prior commitment with someone else.
Well,
and it's my reputation and reliability that's in question and that sort of thing. And we missed some important, we've screwed up someone else's, you know, time and whatever. But yeah, we can go with the movie one and just say that this one, this particular mock situation that we're bringing up is about.
All right. So once again, one, I'm empathizing and I'm saying, it sounds like you have a great need for fun and very disappointed that you're going to miss out on this.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
You were doing other things, you were attending the patients or whatever you were doing that needed to be done, so that we ended up missing the movie or something.
Let's just focus on empathizing. So you wanted fun and you're feeling pissed off about the fact that you're not going to have your fun. Yeah, where do we go from here, Nora?
Yeah, no, I noticed another one that's kind of fun is usually, it's good sometimes to guess. So it sounds like you probably were really looking forward to it. And I learned from my special forces ex-husband that he would be so furious when his fun was messed with. And it was usually because he had been looking forward to it. And when I just empathized with the process of looking forward and now he's all bummed out, that already put some ease for him. I think that being able to rest and relax and have fun and the process of anticipation for it is a very precious thing for some people, probably for all of us, actually. Yeah.
So maybe I need to spend more time just talking and clarifying and just sort of, you know, showing you that I understand how important fun is to you. It's really, really important for you.
Well, yeah, in that situation, I mean, in any situation, I don't think it's helpful to get defensive and defend yourself and get angry in return, and then it escalates.
Okay.
And, you know, then
so do you feel understood more?
Yeah, I guess I do.
Yeah, yeah. Fun is important. It's sacred.
Yeah,
it's,
I think that's helpful to be acknowledged, and you know, and then we can talk about an alternative plan or doing something different.
Well,
next
let's see what Nora suggests after this.
I don't know.
So I've empathized about David's need for fun and David's need for sort of peaceful space and need to look forward to things.
He basically brought up a request. I just heard him say a request, and the request was, now we can maybe make another plan so we can still have fun with the time we have left. So basically, if you translate that into the official NVC grammar, it would be, which you don't always want to speak the official grammar, but to just for the exercise right now, to translate it, he's saying, would you be willing to take some time to look at some other ways that we now could meet my needs for fun and companionship? Because the whole reason why it's probably so much fun is because the partner is along, you know, because the companionship for the fun is in place as well.
So absolutely. We've missed this movie. Absolutely. Let's go and see another movie.
Yeah, I think that's a process that would work. It would certainly work. I mean, there's so many different situations that can come up where you find yourself in a heated argument. That's just one of many, I mean, that any couple could find themselves in.
So I'm finding even in this mock situation, you know, David, you look much more at ease and you look happy. You look like you've been heard. So even, you know, that seems to work. So in terms of this process, how long does it usually take to do all of this?
You mean to do all of this in a communication or?
Well, you have a situation where there's, you know, tension and, you know, you look within and then you empathize with the other person. Presumably should only take a few minutes to reach a point where of de-escalation where you can empathize with the other person and maybe make some, you know, plan or some strategy to a goal, another goal to diffuse a situation.
You know, it's very, very different each time, and it can be very brief and it can go on and on. It has a lot to do with the relaxed, when the tension in the heart is relaxed. However, what happens often is once one need is addressed, and you almost saw this just happening with David. So he gave one mock situation and you ended on fun and play, and without missing a beat, he went on to the next situation where it was about reliability. And so when you sit there and you give empathy and the person, you say fun and play, and then they jump right away to the next one and the energy heats up again and the tension goes up again, you might think you have been unsuccessful, but it's the opposite. what happened is one need got hurt, which was like, yeah, that was about fun and play. Now the other need wants to get hurt also. So they will just jump right to the next thing they want to be heard about. And it's important to recognize this. And so often that when you talk about solution, it's often a dance. You go to a solution, but as soon as you begin to arrive at a solution and begin to hone in agreements, what happens is that any unmet needs that haven't been considered yet will now rise to the surface. And so then you need to jump back to empathy, which is the process of guessing feelings and needs. So step two and three is what's called empathy, feelings and needs. Are you feeling because you're needing? You have to jump back there and do that exploration before you can continue to allow the solution to emerge. And then you may add a piece to the agreement, to the solution, to the mutual contract. But as soon as you add another piece, now there are more needs that want to be understood. So it can take quite a while. And it is like, unfortunately, I don't have a better metaphor right now, but it's a lot like lovemaking, where you go and there's an ebb and flow and an ebb and flow, and you think you're finished, and suddenly the fire comes up again, and you think, oh, you're still in the middle of the fire, and suddenly there's this ebb and peace and stillness. And you actually, the completion of the process finds itself. You know what I mean? All you can do is follow it with awareness.
Yeah, it can get quite complicated, and sounds like that you need to have some management structure in place for managing all the different needs, because obviously the other person could get quite overwhelmed. It sounds like there could be even a process of excitement where person A feels that their needs have been heard, and then they go on to the other needs, and person B could be absolutely swamped by.
There's nothing simple about managing human behavior or even our own behavior. We're just complex, multidimensional beings. But in security, we haven't really talked much about the spiritual warrior philosophy or mentality, but in our security classes and in general, even in the military, there's a use of force continuum. And we talk about the use of deadly force. And in these situations, we're talking about stopping a situation before it escalates to the need for self-defense and protection of others using deadly force, obviously. So we're not really going into the idea of when do you defend yourself and use physical force, because it's not the point of this show.
Absolutely not. I should hope not.
Well, just to clarify, because I know a lot of guys, and I can hear them saying, screw this. What do I do when somebody's about to stab me with a knife or shoot me with a gun? Once the bullets start flying, I'm going to start shooting back. And we've gone through all this in our classes, bodyguard classes and everything. So I can certainly hear a lot of the men and some of the women out there, police officers and stuff, saying, you don't understand how violent the people are that we encounter. And, you know, we've watched videos of, you know, police brutality, you know, like at Walmart in Florida, that escalates into 80 police officers showing up and people dying. And that's the whole point of this show in nonviolent communication, is to address issues like that so it doesn't have that kind of an outcome.
Oh, yeah, we should.
Yeah, at if you choose to use deadly force, you want to look at the need. So if I choose to pull out a gun and shoot somebody, what needs am I meeting? And what feelings are there? I think that's a very important question. If you go as far as considering taking another person's life, it is very, very important to be in touch with the needs you're meeting. Because in nonviolent communication, there is such a thing as protective use of force. But protective use, the emphasis is on protection. And it is a loving protective use of force. It is the use of force that comes from an open heart, versus a use of force that comes from fear, which most of the time we become violent because of the contraction in our heart. So it is a very protective use of force is a very high art. And I certainly would not say that I am good at it. But I find it a beautiful thing to strive for.
Oh, thank you for adding that part about compassionate use of force and protective use of force, because I think that's an important piece to put in there for people who are listening who have that question, because we come up against that a lot, especially with the activists and a lot of others who are, you know, wondering where does this
all this nonviolent communication and de-escalation and techniques fit in with a completely violent encounter where your only option in a split second is to respond with force. And sometimes that does come up. We hope it
there's
doesn't.
There's another thing that when you respond with force, what's really important, why it's called protective use of force, because it's a protection for both sides. And right. What it does, in my opinion, if it's a truly protective or compassionate use of force, it has the awareness of the shared humanity of all involved. So there is no more thinking of the other as an enemy. There's only the recognition that we're in a dilemma and we need to solve it for the highest safety and good of all involved, including those that are attacking us.
That's a perfect explanation.
Including those we want to protect from the attack. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know what else to add to all of this. That's a really, really good interview, Nora. Lots of great information here.
I guess I'm almost stunned by the level of your, the philosophical thinking behind this and the striving towards understanding the shared humanity. I'm wondering whether one would ever use a protective use of force with that in mind, but I guess there could be situations when you do use that. There's so many layers to this.
There could be a situation where, and it happens all the time, where someone shows up unexpectedly with a gun and they've had a bad day or they're whatever psychosis means. I'm not going to go into that right now. Yes. But people show up and their mass murders happen and you can't, in that moment, they're about to kill people and it may be that they've already fired shots and you've got a weapon to put a stop to this so that to prevent other lives from being extinguished. So you have to make that decision. And I may have to stop this right away so other innocent people don't die. And there may not be any time for negotiation, diplomacy to prevent those other people, innocent people from dying. So
what I'm hearing though is the importance of being centered in yourself with those highest, intentions and the ability to empathize with others before taking any action. And I guess it can take some time to get to that place.
Sure.
So I guess it's really good to practice this on an everyday basis.
Yeah, and I think that actually activists often come from the protective use of force. Activism is often based, in the way it looks to me, on the recognition that damage is being done to all of humanity and to our planet, And a lot of activism comes from the recognition that we need to employ protective use of force. And a lot of activists, at least that I know of, do a lot of work with nonviolent communication because they've recognized that we cannot protect everybody and hold our shared humanity if we demonize another human being. So it's very important that all sides are held with their humanity. And I have also seen police officers employ protective use of force, where I see that they are here to help all sides find a peaceful resolution. And I can feel the heart, the recognition that most likely the people who are fighting are all in pain and in fear. So I think there's actually a lot of potential, both on the sides of people who are activists as well as in the police force, to come. I actually think a lot of police officers become officers out of this reason, because they want to serve.
Yeah, I think that, a lot of people going into law enforcement and social work and activism certainly had a lot of compassion and passion for protecting life. Hopefully everyone does. I know that's not always true. Or even generally true, but it's, who knows?
It's important to look deep within to make sure that what you're doing is what you're doing for the right reasons.
Yeah, your highest good, for sure.
Look, we're running out of time. We'd love to have you on the show again. There's some really, really important, beautiful, thoughts there and the really great practical techniques that you've also suggested. So look, thank you so much, Nora.
Yeah, thank you,
and
Nora.
We've been talking to Nora Hoffman, whose website is www.teutonicconsulting.com. And Nora is available for consulting on, you know, in these areas. And lovely to have you on the show, Nora.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
And
fun to talk to you both again.
Goodbye from us at Universal Soul Love.
Yep, goodbye for now.
Bye.
Bye for now. Bye-bye.